Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Do you know something I actually really love about you?
Well, hopefully quite a lot.
No. No, I'm a very anxious, nervous, shy, what have you person, wouldn't you say? Quite introverted.
Just soil yourself in the corner of the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
And something I do really like about you is that you'll always encourage me to do stuff, you know, and try something.
Yeah.
But you never, ever pressure me. And I feel like that's, you don't get that. If you're an anxious person or introverted or, you know, what have you, you tend to get pressured into doing stuff. It'll be good for you. You need to get out there. You need to try it. You know, you really should X, Y, and Z.
No.
You never, ever pressure me.
So for someone like me, if you were to pressure and push me, you'll get more out of me. But I think someone who has anxiety and stuff, the more you push, the less you're going to get.
Yeah.
You suggest it and leave it at that.
Yeah, but
I think you could do that. No, yeah. Try it, do it. I'll never do that.
Yeah, no, but I really do appreciate it, especially when it comes to like social situations. People think if you have social anxiety that you need to put yourself out there more. And yeah, to a point.
Yeah.
You know, you still need to try, but some people think that throw you into the deep end attitude works.
It does with me.
It does with your... look it. When it comes to networking and stuff, Neil's your man.
Mm.
When it comes to me, absolutely not. I'm just awkward. Like, people think there's something wrong with me. I said it to you the other day, didn't I? Do you remember? I was like, do you ever just look at me and think, what is wrong with her?
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh, that's not what you said the other day. The other day, you were like, no, absolutely not. And you almost looked like you felt bad for me when I said that. I wasn't like digging for a compliment. I actually meant, do you ever look at me and be like, what is actually wrong with her?
Like, I don't want to make this all about me. Because a lot of our listeners seem to be under the impression, but I like to bring stuff around to me all the time. I don't know where they get that from at all. But I will do with this. Life is hard for me. Life is hard for me, and I'll tell you why. Because you're such a shell of a woman in social environments, I have to step my game up all the time.
You have to be that much funnier and charming.
Yeah.
To make up for me.
Yeah.
And my lack and of charisma.
And I don't get any credit for it.
Hmm.
So that's, I'll just leave that there.
Leave that to marinate.
Yeah.
Right. Well, to be fair, this whole starter was kind of a shout out to you and praising you. Because like I said, I generally speaking, I feel like people have been more pushy. Not just towards me, I think people in general who are more anxious or introverted.
Mm.
But no, I have to say, you are a delight when it comes to things like that.
Well, thank you. I'll take that. Mm. So I did get some credit. It only took 10 years.
Well, do you know, I thought it was about time. It popped into my head the other day. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm going to bring this up. And then I started laughing about it because 9 times out of 10 when I'm addressing you, it's, you know what pisses me off about you? I had to throw one positive your way, you know?
Right. Well, I'll take that. I didn't want to make it sound like it was, you know, I was talking about just me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad you've noticed, but I don't push.
No, you're very good for that.
Like, you threw me fucking face first into true crime. So you need to learn from me.
The thing is, right, you say I threw you into it. There was a lot of preparation before we even recorded the first episode.
There was, but you must have asked me 3 times to do a true crime podcast with you before I said yes.
Yeah, I definitely had to convince you to do it. You were a little bit sus, but I think you're happy that you've done it now.
Yeah.
And in fairness, I never get you to... I know it's not your scene. You don't want to do that other than on Patreon. You do your own little thing. You do Neil's Nuggets.
Oh, I couldn't do this every week.
That's what I mean. It wouldn't be your scene. I would never, ever expect you to do the research into it and be reading it all the time because I think it'd be a bit too heavy for you. I think it would get in on you a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it definitely would.
Are we getting a Neil's Nuggets anytime soon, actually?
Just throwing me under the fucking bus. We've got CrimeCon coming up. Right, guys, this is what's been going on for me lately. Right. So my car shit itself. Well, it didn't shit itself. I could jump in that car and drive it to Belfast and I wouldn't have any issues. But I took it for its NCT, which is, you know, Irish MOT, and it failed. I were expecting it to fail. It's fine. Write a list of the jobs what need doing and I'll bring it back. But they basically put a dangerous on it, saying there was corrosion on the chassis. So it's like, oh, I can't even drive the car home. So then I borrowed Megan's mum's car while we're looking at another car. Drove it once and the accelerator stuck on it. Nearly went into the back of a car in front of me. But because of my fast reactions, I did not. So I took that back to them and I'm like, your car's shagged now.
So now the general consensus is that don't let Neil in a car.
Yeah.
If you value that car, don't let him near it.
So then the car we went to look at, it was like, oh yeah, looks tidy this. Looks in really good nick. It looks, yeah. No, battery's fucked. So I took the battery out of my car because that was actually okay. And this new car drained that battery immediately. So that's shagged. Need to get a new battery and need to get some other work done on that. And then, so then I turned to Megan's dad and I'm like, could I borrow your car? And he's like, well, that's broke. I'm like, so we've got 4 broken cars in 3 days.
Yeah, we're not doing so well on that front, vehicular wise.
Yeah. So when I have the time, I will do a Neil's Nuggets.
Yeah.
But because they're that good, I want to space them out.
Yeah, no, I understand. You kind of went around the houses to say that though, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, where's my tiny, tiny violin?
I was going to say, you know what's so hilarious about it is that you just said like, you know, oh, people think that everything's about me. You literally went the long way to say, this has happened to me. This is why. This is my story.
Right, so enough about me and how great I am. We do have a shout out.
We do indeed.
Abracababra. That's all I'm saying. That should help. Like, can people guess what the name is?
Abracababra is actually a fast food place in Ireland.
It is not.
Yes, it is. Can you take a guess what they serve?
I want to say kebabs.
They do.
Okay.
I don't know what else they serve. I don't even know how many, like...
Well, if it's Turkish, it'll be like skewers and that and all, won't it?
skewers and that and all. I don't even know how many are still going. I feel like it was a very 90s, 2000s thing.
I can say I haven't seen one.
I haven't seen an ad for them in years. So I don't even know. But yeah, I've never even been to one.
Do you think anyone's going to guess the name?
Abracababra.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they will because you've changed a very specific part of the word. But if not, Babs is her name. If Neil's name was too sophisticated for you, what about Bablin Babs?
Bablin?
Bablin. Or is that a bit insulting? She's just mouthy. She's always babbling on.
She could be.
She could be. If that's too insulting, what about the Babylonian goddess Babs? That's a bit more complimentary.
What the fuck is that?
Babylonian.
What's that?
Like the city of Babylonia.
Well, what is it?
Babylonia was an ancient city.
What, like the one underwater?
What?
In the, like an ancient city underwater?
Atlantis.
Yeah.
No.
Oh. No, but is it like that?
No.
Oh.
So what are we landing on here?
Mine.
Abracababra.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a mouthful to say every time though, isn't it?
What was yours? Babylonian fucking
Babylonian
what?
Babs the goddess or Babylonian goddess Babs. What the hell did I say?
Exactly.
Yeah. We'll stick with Babs or Bablin Bab. What do you reckon?
What's wrong with mine?
If you're messaging her every time, do you want to be writing Abracababra? Think about it, Neil.
Well, I'll just shorten it and give her a nickname Babs.
So we're back to her actual name of Babs.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Babs, thank you.
Or I'll call her Babra.
Please don't interrupt me.
Because Bab... Oh, yeah, because you never interrupt me. Never, ever. Because it's Babs is short for Barbara.
Barbara.
Babra.
Babra.
Babra. That's her name.
Babra.
Babra.
Okay, Babra. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Think you know true crime? Think again. We're diving into the bizarre and the cases that leave you questioning everything.
I'm Amber.
And I'm Gina. We're the hosts of Weird True Crime, a podcast that explores the strangest, most mind-boggling cases out there.
From the dark history behind everyday things you think you know, to cases so wild they sound like fiction, we dig into it all.
Behind every headline, every missing persons poster, and every unsolved case, there are families who are still searching for answers and loved ones who refuse to be forgotten.
We speak with families of the missing and murdered, helping them tell their stories, spread awareness, and keep hope alive.
Because too often, these cases don't get the attention they deserve.
Whether you're drawn to the unbelievable, the unsolved, or the heartbreaking, we're here to tell these stories with the care and respect they deserve.
Listen to Weird True Crime wherever you get your podcasts.
Because crime is weird.
And the truth is stranger than fiction.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
So. We've done 100.
We have indeed.
But let's keep it going strong. What have you got for us today?
Well, today, Neil, we are going to be talking about Johnny Lewis and the murder of Catherine Davis.
Okay.
I did tell you before that you know this case.
Yeah, I haven't got a clue.
Names aren't ringing a bell.
No.
All right. Well, we'll get there soon. And I guarantee you're going to hear Neil go, "Oh!"
This is going to be like your man dressing up as a woman, isn't it?
What?
This is going to be like your man dressing up as a woman. I
Haddon.
Yeah.
When we had just covered him and we went to the next one, I said the name Haddon again and you were like, who?
No, but when we first covered him, as soon as you said...
Oh, yeah, you did know the case. Yeah, but it was towards the end. And you were like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh, Haddon, it's yourself.
So who? Carol Davis.
Johnny Lewis and the murder of Catherine Davis.
Catherine Davis. No.
Catherine Davis was known to many as Miss Kathy. She was originally from Texas, but moved to California in 1950, where she attended UCLA. She worked in publishing before going on to marry James H. Davis, with whom she went on to have a daughter, born in 1958. By the 80s, Kathy and James had divorced, and with her daughter all grown up, she saw an opportunity to take on a new venture in life. Kathy made the decision to go into real estate. She decided to start renting out rooms in her home in Los Feliz to her clients while they searched for their forever homes. The same house would later become known as the Writer's Villa. A beautiful home built in 1927 with views of the San Gabriel Mountains. And although extravagant in some aspects, Kathy still managed to make this house feel like a home to many. Over the years, it was a haven for many artists attempting to break through into the world of showbiz. And Kathy housed the likes of Val Kilmer, Parker Posey, Paula Poundstone, and Chris Parnell. Paula Poundstone would later recall a time when the taxi that she had ordered to take her to the airport never arrived. And after Kathy saw how anxious Paula had become, she drove her to the airport herself. Now that's a good woman right there. You'd be hard-pressed to even find a family member willing to drive you to the airport.
I did it for someone we work with.
Yeah, but were you happy about it?
Well, I was happy to oblige.
So you were happy about it?
Well, yeah, I'm happy to help out.
Did you pay the toll for that trip? The look of realisation on Neil's face right now. That's a penalty coming your way.
I don't know if I did or not.
You'll check your emails to see if you have the receipt. The email you receipt.
Okay.
Can I
do that now?
Yes, check your phone now.
Okay, I did. I checked my emails, it's there.
Crisis averted.
Fucking hell. Right. It doesn't sound too bad. It was the end of July. But there's some people who are having to pay thousands.
Yeah.
Because
they just didn't bother their folk paying it.
They never paid it and they just let the fucking arrears build up.
So back to Kathy and the Writer's Villa.
Mm-hmm.
Another actor who had stayed in Kathy's home was Thomas Jane. He moved into the Writer's Villa following a breakup. He said, quote, "I needed a quiet place to stay. I met Kathy and fell in love with her place immediately. The dark wood and heavy furniture relaxed me. It was the perfect place to lick my wounds."
Okay, couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
One, I've never heard of any of these actors, right? Two, he's just broke up and he's moving in with some other bird.
No.
Sus. And then he's going to feel comfortable. Yeah, because he's living with birds. Three, lick his what?
Lick his wounds.
Yeah. He's playing on fucking words there. Dirty bastard.
So not a fan of Thomas Jane?
No.
So you do know all of these people? Yeah.
No.
No. Wait a minute. You do. I will show you a picture of all of them later.
Mm-hmm.
But one I will say to you straight away, the guy Chris Parnell. Do you remember in Friends? Who the hell is this Chandler? Do you remember when Chandler?
I do remember that, but I can't remember who it was.
Oh. Okay, well, this was failed then. Do you remember when Chandler's just going by the name Toby because it's too awkward to tell his coworker that his name is actually Chandler? And then Chandler has to move
dark
him around.
And they trash his office at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah, that guy.
Okay, he did it.
What?
Well, he did it.
He did what?
Killed this woman, this actress.
No, he simply stayed at her home at one point.
Okay. But he's not the one saying, lick this and fucking...
Lick this?
Well, he did. He said something about licking.
He said that the Writer's Villa was the perfect place to lick his wounds. Meaning like he's been injured and he needs somewhere to kind of... recover. Like an animal would lick their wounds after being injured.
Right. You're female.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for a roommate.
Yeah.
Would you take a bloke in who's just broke? What?
She's not looking for like a roommate. Do you know, she's renting out these rooms. He's not trying it on. As far as I know, he's not trying it on with Kathy.
Oh. I missed that bit. Okay.
Kathy's an older woman.
Right.
The next line is literally, she was known as a sweet older woman. Okay. Anyway, Kathy was known as...
I got it under the impression but you were there as a roommate.
I mean, in a sense, yes. But she was renting out these rooms. She was their landlady. It's more that kind
but
of a
setting. But she lives in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the roommates. Would you, it's right, a... if you're looking for a roommate, yeah?
Yeah.
Would you take a fella who's just broke up with your missus?
Who's in the corner licking us.
Yeah. Who's looking for something to lick?
Do you know when I'm writing up a fucking episode, there's a lot of times I'm writing and I'm like, oh, this would be good. Neil's going to have a funny reaction to this. Ha ha ha. Never in a million years did I think lick my wounds will be the one to get you. But anyway, I think we're getting bogged down in the details.
Yeah.
He liked Kathy's place. He felt comfortable there.
I bet he did.
Kathy was known as a sweet older woman who would always leave the door open for those who she had previously provided accommodation for. And it was through the writer's villa that Kathy met a young actor by the name of Johnny Lewis. Johnny Kendrick Lewis was born on the 29th of October, 1983, in California to parents Michael and Devona Lewis. His upbringing was described as Jewish-oriented, and he was born into Scientology. His parents were, or are, high-ranking members at the level of OT-8, the highest level you can be. As a teenager, Johnny himself had starred in tutorial videos for the church, but made the decision to leave Scientology in his early 20s. He'd started acting at the age of 7, first starring in advertisements. By the age of 18, Johnny had moved out of his parents' house in the Valley and made the move to Hollywood.
They're a mad bunch, aren't they?
Scientologists.
Yeah.
They're a mad bunch.
No, have you seen some of them, like, the documentaries where if you say anything bad about them, they're just harassing you and stalking you, and it's just very weird.
Yeah, Louis Theroux did a documentary on Scientology. You know, I love Louis Theroux.
Mm.
An icon.
He just reminds me of Mr. Bean.
Do you think?
Yeah.
One that I loved was Leah Remini's one.
Yeah.
Especially for how she says Scientology. She got that proper New York thing going, hasn't she?
Yeah, but I don't see how that makes how she says Scientology.
Scientology.
Oh, okay.
Scientology.
Yeah.
It's proper, like, she proper, like,
yeah,
a certain parts of the word. That's going to be disgusting for the listener to hear that. Sorry. Back to Johnny.
Mm.
He had sort of a boyish charm, with others describing his personality as intoxicating. Quote, he was loved by everybody. He merged with different groups really easily. He fit in everywhere. One of his long-term friends said of Johnny, no drugs, no alcohol. They said
he fit in everywhere. Put him in a Catholic church.
What?
Put him in a Catholic church.
What are you on about?
Well, he was brought up Jewish and then
went
to Scientology. Put him in a Catholic church and get on with that.
No, right. So like his family background may be Jewish,
mm,
but in Scientology, I'm not in it, but from what I know of it, it's kind of like you can have your other religions, or at least that's kind of the claim.
Oh.
You're not like confined to it, or again, at least that's what some people say about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
But still, put him in a Catholic church.
What? Why are you immediately going for religion?
Well, that's all I've got so far. So he said, get on with everyone.
Are you trying to tell, you're not Catholic?
No.
Are you trying to tell me you don't get on with any Catholics? Is that what you're saying right now, Neil?
I never said that. Stop turning it on me.
You got an issue with the Catholics.
I was just trying to find someone who he wouldn't get on with.
Why?
Like an house on fire.
Why are you coming for Johnny at this moment in time?
Because they'd have not to talk about, would they?
What?
They'd have not to talk about.
So because someone's Catholic, that's all they've got to talk about?
Why? Right, carry on.
Get a bit bogged down again, the details, aren't we? One of his long-term friends said of Johnny, no drugs, no alcohol, just poetry and philosophy. So it seems Johnny didn't really get swept up in the chaos of Hollywood in that sense. With his laid-back appearance yet dedicated approach to his craft, he did draw attention. In 2006, Johnny began dating pop singer Katy Perry. Their relationship was short-lived, but it has been rumoured that Johnny was the inspiration for Katy's song, The One That Got Away.
I've heard of her.
Katy Perry?
Mm.
It's kind of hard to fucking miss her.
She kissed a girl and she liked it.
She did, yeah. That's what she claimed anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she were another famous sus bastard, weren't she?
Yeah, she was, yeah.
We won't say his name.
Mm.
But yeah, there's a dog breed called Jack. And their surname is his first name.
Did you actually, sorry, this is kind of like sidebar, Katy Perry and all that. Did you hear about all that drama with her and the convent she tried to buy?
No. Oh, yeah.
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 And one of the nuns died.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In the court. Yeah. So we're connecting it all. It's like the Catholics, we're coming back around to that.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah. See how we do it here. Very clever. Now, my first memory of Johnny is from an episode of Malcolm in the Middle. But when I first saw him as a main character and he became a face that I would recognise was in a sitcom called Quintuplets. He has appeared in many more well-known films and television shows since then, like The O.C., Bones, Alien vs. Predator Requiem, and Criminal Minds. But I think the role which made Johnny most recognisable came from his role as the prospect Kip Halfsack Epps in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, shit!
There we go. There we go.
Oh!
The realisation setting in now.
Oh, yeah, Yeah.
Tone it down.
Okay. I loved him in Sons of Anarchy as well.
Oh yeah, I thought he was great in it.
Yeah.
Although Johnny only appeared in 2 out of the 7 seasons of the show, he definitely made an impression. Johnny made the decision to leave Sons of Anarchy in 2009 owing to the gratuitous violence in the storylines. The show's creator, Kurt Sutter, said, quote, Johnny wasn't happy. Creatively, he wanted out of his contract. Although it seems crazy to leave such a popular show, especially so early on, Johnny saw himself as more of an artist and writer, and he was going to use the money which he had made from Sons of Anarchy to live off while he finished writing his first novel. And he would do this at the writer's villa, in the red suite on the second floor.
Yeah, because he were going to get patched in and everything, weren't he? Because he were a prospect on Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
But towards the end...
Yeah, he got his patch...
Yeah.
At his funeral.
Yeah.
Mm. Sorry to ruin the show for you lads. You hadn't seen it, but... It's early on.
He died.
That same year, Johnny found out that he was going to be a father. His daughter was born on the 6th of April 2010. And although he was no longer in a romantic relationship with the mother of his child, they decided to live together in order to raise their child.
Brave. You okay?
Yeah.
What, you got an issue with me saying that's brave?
Well, what do you mean? Like, it's just a difficult situation?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Well, yes, it is. And unfortunately, things didn't work out and Johnny moved out. Following this, a very difficult custody battle ensued, which Johnny would ultimately lose and I'm sure put him in a particularly difficult headspace. On the 30th of October 2011, Johnny was involved in a traffic accident. He lost control of his Triumph motorcycle, which resulted in him being thrown from the bike at high speed. He was taken to the hospital and checked for signs of concussion. The results came back negative. But following the accident, Johnny's behaviour started to change. Friends and family said that he was behaving in an erratic and bizarre manner. On the 3rd of January 2012, Johnny broke into a condo after he thought he heard someone in distress. There was no one home when Johnny entered the condo, but two men soon appeared and asked him to leave. Johnny then goes to hit one of the men with a bottle. A fight breaks out, and Johnny bites one of the men on the arm before they manage to restrain him while they wait for the police.
So you're only a little fella.
I think he was tall enough, but yeah, he's quite a slender build.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bilb.
What?
Bilb.
He starts speaking and got thrown off. He's quite a slender build.
Yeah.
Although he claimed he did this in self-defense, Johnny was charged with trespassing, burglary, and assault with a deadly weapon.
Oh, they shouldn't do him for trespassing.
Well, he did break into someone's home.
Yeah, but he thought he was helping.
Yeah, but there was no one home, so they're not really going to believe that. You don't agree?
No, I don't agree with that at all.
He was sent to jail, and while there, he was placed in a psychiatric ward before his father bailed him out 8 days later. On his discharge papers, the reason for hospitalization read, quote, chief complaint, blunt head trauma, and suicidal. After his release, Johnny returned to his parents' house. His sister Anna said, quote, he looked like a wounded, broken animal.
Fucking hell. That is a rotten thing to say. Look like roadkill.
No, she's not saying that. What? She's saying that he seemed broken, like he was distraught. He wasn't himself. He was upset.
Yeah, but saying animal, I think that's a bit rough.
His erratic behaviour continued. He'd become incredibly uncomfortable with anyone touching him, and he would prefer to be in darkness and would turn off all of the lights within the home. In the weeks that followed, Johnny slashed his wrists in an attempt to end his life. But he did recover and was said to have been coping much better. Then on the 10th of February, Johnny was arrested for attacking a man outside of a yogurt shop.
Yogurt. To my fellow Brits, she's saying a yogurt shop.
It's yogurt.
It's people fucking say, not.
You know, when someone says yogurt, you know what I think of? Ooh-ar. Yogurt.
What?
Ooh-ar. It's proper like fucking like country sounding. Do you know what I mean?
No.
It's yogurt. Yogurt. It's like the mads. Remember for Ambrosia? Ooh-ar. It's Ambrosia.
Yeah.
Remember them? That's what you sound like. That's you right now.
Okay.
So after Johnny attacked a man outside of a yogurt shop, he would later be released on a $20,000 bail. A few days later, Johnny went to the Santa Monica beach where he'd walk into the sea fully clothed. He was then hospitalised for hypothermia. On the 18th of February, Johnny was arrested for breaking into a woman's apartment, which he thought belonged to his friend. He was arrested and later released on bail. Now, by this stage, Johnny seems to be drowning in the depths of mental illness.
Yeah.
His friend said of him, quote, it was another person completely. He had a look I've only seen in disturbed veterans of war. His memory was scattered. He vacillated between lucid conversations and incoherence. Of course, his family were incredibly worried about him. And although an MRI was recommended and scheduled multiple times, Johnny refused to go through with testing. He was prescribed antipsychotic medication commonly used to treat schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. But Johnny was defiant about taking his medication, and it's thought that he was merely pretending by, you know, cheeking the pills.
Yeah.
On the 23rd of May 2012, Johnny was sent to a rehabilitation facility that treated both substance abuse and psychosis. While there, Johnny sent an email to multiple friends. Quote, the core of the story is that I was involved in a fight. My actions were self-defense, but my means were a glass bottle. After a few court dates and a stint in the county jail and the realization that there is no self-defense law in California, I'm back on my feet and doing well. The court case is still ongoing, but from what we're hearing, it is every chance of getting dropped outright or disappearing with time served. On a side note, we are pleading rehab to avoid a trial. Marijuana addiction. Although those at the facility did not believe Johnny's story, and he switched from marijuana addiction to say that he was addicted to alcohol. In July of 2012, Johnny wrote in his diary, quote, "Felt more whole today, more complete. Like parts of myself have been stolen in my sleep and scattered all over the world, and now they've begun to return. I'm more determined than ever now. I'll face what I am. I'll face what I was." So Johnny had been so confident in his plea of self-defense that he made the decision to dismiss his lawyer and represent himself. But, like said, there's no defense law.
Yeah.
In California, and things did not go to plan. He was sentenced to 1 year in jail. But due to overcrowding, Johnny only served 6 weeks and was released on the 21st of September. Upon his release, his father helped him shop for some new clothes, went with him to pick up his bike, and had arranged accommodation for his son at the rider's villa. His father felt that maybe the calm and familiar setting would be good for Johnny, but in the time since Johnny had last lived with Kathy, with the exception of some seemingly brief periods of optimism, Johnny's life overall appeared to be on a downward trajectory. He had become a father, but then dealt with a particularly difficult and upsetting custody battle. He'd been involved in a motorcycle accident, been in and out of jail for a string of violent assaults, and in and out of both psychiatric wards and rehab, as well as having attempted suicide.
So this is where I'm at. Like, I don't know if this is a depression thing because of the custody, or if it's brain damage from the crash.
Well, this is the thing. Johnny didn't actually have a formal diagnosis. Was he bipolar or schizophrenic? If so, this seems to be going without treatment. Or was it head trauma caused by the accident, as his father believed? And was there possible subsequent brain damage caused by his time in jail? Do you remember on the papers, the discharge papers, when it said blunt head trauma?
Yeah.
Johnny had beat his head against a concrete wall 17 times.
Fucking hell.
Mm-hmm. And the suicide attempt was he tried to jump from an upper level.
Right. See, the schizophrenia and the bipolar thing, I'm not thinking that, because before the crash and before the custody thing, is there any criminal history? Or is it all after?
No.
So I think it's head trauma from the crash and or depression from the custody battle.
Well, damage caused to the brain, specifically the frontal lobe, it wouldn't be shocking to see issues such as impulsivity, irritability, and impaired judgment. Whatever the case may be, his probation officer certainly didn't think it was appropriate that Johnny be left to his own devices. Quote, "very concerned for the well-being of not only the community, but that of the defendant."
Yeah, like I know he was refusing treatment and refusing testing. But I think at that point, that's when...
You think it should have been involuntary?
Sectioned, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, not just for everyone else's safety, yeah, but for his own.
Mm-hmm.
Section him.
On Monday, the 24th of September, Johnny's father called him to see how he was and make sure that he had settled into his accommodation. But when Johnny answered the phone, he simply replied, quote, "I'm busy. What do you want?" 2 days later, on the 26th of September 2012, Johnny approached the house next to the rider's villa and introduced himself to his neighbours, Dan and Gloria Blackburn. About half an hour later, Dan hears Gloria calling him to come outside. That day, they had a painter working on the house. As Dan walks outside, he sees Johnny viciously beating the painter with his bare fists. Dan quickly runs over and grabs Johnny by the shoulder. Johnny breaks from the attack on the painter to punch Dan in the face, knocking him to the ground. Dan manages to get back on his feet, and he hits Johnny in the head. But Johnny is almost in a trance-like state, and is hardly even fazed by the hit. There's no emotion, and his eyes are glazed over. In an attempt to get his wife and the painter to safety, Dan grabs a chair and strikes Johnny. Dan, Gloria, and the painter scramble to get into the house. They just about make it before Johnny manages to get his arm in the doorway, preventing them from shutting the door. They repeatedly slam the door on him before he finally retracts his arm.
Fucking hell, it's like a horror film, isn't it?
It is. That's terrifying. With the doors finally locked, Dan watches out the window to see Johnny hop over the fence back to the rider's villa. Dan said, quote, he was like a low-key Spider-Man.
Well, I was thinking more like Walking Dead. It's him, there's no response, and then arm through door and that.
Yeah, but for Dan, he's watching him just hop the fence with ease. Yeah. And he's just like, what the fuck just happened? Knowing that Johnny had finally retreated, they call the police. In a matter of minutes, police arrive at the scene. They walk up to Kathy's house and see blood running down the driveway. They then find Johnny lying face up in the middle of the driveway, his skull cracked open and his left eye socket caved in. As they enter the home, there was no immediate signs of any further disturbance. But as they walk up the stairs, they see broken glass. And in the red suite, Johnny's room, they find a rusted hammer with traces of blood in it. In the shower of Johnny's ensuite, they find Kathy's cat covered in blood and brutally beaten to death. They go across the hall into Kathy's bedroom. There's blood on the walls, her bed, and the table and chair. 81-year-old Kathy was laid next to her bed. Her cause of death, blunt force trauma. Quote, fractured her entire skull and obliterated the left side of her face, leaving her brain exposed.
Fucking hell.
Brain and tissue matter seen on the floor around her. Her face is covered in blood. Her nose is split down the middle and her upper jaw is split open. Now that's from the coroner's report.
Fucking hell. Did he smack himself in the face as he were hitting her then?
I think so. Because I can't figure out if he's lying face up.
Yeah.
How there's a fracture to his eye socket.
Yeah.
There was also puncture wounds to her face, which is believed to have been caused by a mechanical pen found near her body. It's thought that Johnny began his attack on Kathy by punching her and then moved to strangulation. It's unsure if the hammer found in Johnny's room was used in this attack or not, but given the devastating injuries to Kathy, it's believed that Johnny had also stomped on Kathy's head.
Fucking hell.
It's thought that Johnny attacked Kathy and then her cat before making his way over to the neighbours, where he assaults Dan Blackburn and the painter working on his house.
Oh, that was after?
It's thought, yeah. After retreating from the attack on his neighbours, he then climbs the terrace of Kathy's home. The distance from the terrace to the ground was about 15 feet. It is unknown whether Johnny jumped or fell to his death, but his death was officially ruled an accident. Quote, we do not have definitive evidence that he intended to kill himself. We also do not, at this time, have any evidence that he was pushed. With the brutality of the attack and the celebrity link, rumours quickly circulated through the media. The initial theory was that Johnny was under the influence of drugs at the time of the murder. Of course, because of how frenzied the attack was, but also because of his previous stints in rehab facilities. Of course, we know he was using that as part of his plea deal.
Yeah.
The toxicology report was able to disprove the use of drugs. There was no trace of any drugs or alcohol in the system, including his antipsychotic medication. His autopsy reported nail marks on both sides of his neck and partial strangulation.
There was partial strangulation on him?
Yeah, so I took that to mean maybe him grabbing at his neck.
Oh, not her. It was a defence thing.
It could have been the nail marks, but given how frenzied it was that she was an older woman, for there to be enough pressure now for strangulation, I assumed it was maybe him at some point on his
but
neck.
I don't know what they mean by partial strangulation. Like how much?
I assume it meant, because obviously nail marks are one thing, scratches.
Mm.
That could have been Kathy. But when they say partial strangulation, I assume they mean that there was enough pressure to produce bruising.
They'd have said, but they found his skin under her fingernails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, due to the family's connection to Scientology and that the Church of Scientology are dismissive of psychiatric treatment,
There was concerns as to whether Johnny had been deprived of the treatment that he needed. But Johnny's father maintained that he had tried his best to encourage his son to seek psychiatric treatment, and that it was Johnny who would not cooperate. Which Johnny's attorney did second this. Quote, "I give a lot of credit to his parents. They were really strong in trying to help him out. They really went to bat for him, but I guess they just couldn't do enough." The Church of Scientology also released a statement. Quote, "We are saddened this tragedy is being insensitively exploited by a handful of anti-Scientologists whose only concern is promoting themselves and their hate-filled agenda." It's not about you guys.
I was just about to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you making it about yourself?
Mm-hmm. Actress Beau Garrett said of Johnny's relationship with Kathy, quote, "I hung out with him over there a few times. I remember all the nice things he said about her and how she opened her place to artists and eccentrics." Beau also spoke at Johnny's memorial service and said, quote, "I'm so sorry I couldn't be more there for you, that I couldn't save you from pain. Some of us are built with the tools to survive this world. Some of us are not." His friend Sharon Woodward said, quote, "Johnny Lewis, I love you deeply and madly and always. My heart is broken in a million little pieces. Johnny Lewis was one of my best friends. He was very, very, very ill. His actions were a despicable result of that. It was not who he was." Unfortunately, some were not surprised by what had transpired. Kurt Sutter, the creator of Sons of Anarchy, stated, quote, "It was a tragic end for an extremely talented guy, who unfortunately had lost his way. I wish I could say I was shocked by the events last night, but I was not." But what about Kathy? Against the weight of celebrity and intrigue surrounding Johnny Lewis and his mental health struggles, Kathy seems to get somewhat lost in the story. So we'll finish up with a few words about Kathy. Described as a Hollywood legend, a near saint, a kind and loving mother to so many, a woman who had an unwavering respect for the arts. And that is the case of Johnny Lewis and the murder of Catherine Davis. An incredibly sad story all around.
Really is. If they'd just sectioned him.
Well, this is the thing. I'm obviously going to get your opinion, Neil.
Yeah.
Do you think there was a certain amount of enabling going on here? Or do you believe that his family were doing what they thought was best? You know, his father, as well as his attorney, stated that the parents were really putting themselves out there, trying to get him the help, encouraging him. They were behind him 100%.
I think the family was doing what they could. I think it should have been the authorities. Because
he did speak up and say, "I do not think he should be unsupervised, so to speak.
Yeah, like,
he needs care."
You can't really put it on the family as much because he was over 18. It was a fucking adult. So it's where the authorities should have been like, right, section him.
So I was a little bit wary of the parents.
Because they were still checking on him and stuff.
Yeah, so I was a bit wary, especially, look, the Scientology aspect, and they're not big fans of psychiatric treatment. But look, if his father is basically saying, well, fuck that, I know my son needs help, and if people are backing him, right, I'll take your word for it. Where you lose me is, I find it hard to believe that you would think it's best to house someone experiencing mental illness, which includes violent outbursts, with an 81-year-old woman. Why did his father think? I understand he said, oh, calm, familiar, relaxing environment. But at that moment in time, Johnny's behavior was unpredictable and could be violent. Why would you think that is the best option for him or Kathy?
Yeah. But he'd never shown violence to, like, an elderly woman, where it were men.
But his behavior was erratic and bizarre to their description.
Yeah.
You know? There was also at one point, you know, it's not really relevant, but like his friend was saying, you know, Johnny would kind of break into a random English accent and stuff like that. You know, it was kind of like they noticed these kind of behaviors.
You do
out
that
of the norm.
All the time.
Yes, I do, but it's normal for me. You know what I mean? They were noticing these things. It was friends and family go, like, this isn't
Johnny, there's something going on here.
Mm.
You know, that's the detail that gets me. Even if they were trying to help him in every other aspect, why would you think that is the best situation for him to be living in? For him or Kathy?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's the parents then.
What do you mean it's the parents then?
Like they should have done more.
I don't know the full situation. I don't know if Kathy was aware of it and she went, yeah, no, let him live with me or what. I don't know.
Mm.
I assume not, but I don't know. That is the bit though that really sticks out for me. Why would you think that is the best option for anyone?
Yeah, that doesn't add up. The bit what I'm honing in on is, so clear, I've already said, he should have been sectioned. If he was refusing treatment, but it would get to the point where he was a risk to himself and others, that should be the grounds for sectioning. And the bipolar and schizophrenia thing, I think that's a cop-out. I think it's either brain damage from the collision and or depression from the custody.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, I definitely think he was in a state of psychosis at the time of the attack. You know, whatever was causing it, you know, for them to say it was, you know, it was frenzied, it was trance-like state, his eyes were glazed over.
Yeah, like it...
Also, that, I mean, like you said, it's like a horror movie. The whole thing, they're slamming the door on him repeatedly. That would hurt like fuck. And he's just so determined to get at them.
Yeah, to me, it sounds like, is it CTE? I'd have a guess at CTE. You know, like Chris Benoit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've got in my head. What you
that's
think
what
I
you've
have.
Got in your head.
That's what you think I have, yeah. Yeah, that's the idea I've got. I think he smacked his head a bit too hard in the crash.
Mm-hmm.
He should have been on a Harley, really.
It is, though. It's just incredibly sad all around. You know, there's, you know, like I said, Kathy gets lost in the story because he's a celebrity. But then also on the other side of the argument, you know, people kind of make him out to be a villain.
Yeah.
And although, yes, if he was refusing treatment, that's not okay. You know, don't ever refuse treatment. But if someone's not well, sometimes that happens. And it's a very difficult situation. And it's, look, I don't think it's right to villainize someone or forget about someone in a story.
Mm.
It's just fucking devastating for everyone involved.
Well, actually, speaking of Chris Benoit, that's something they could have done with Johnny. After scan his brain, really test his brain like they did with Chris Benoit.
I wonder why that hasn't been done, or
because of the Scientology thing,
or if it has. Well, he had left, so unless his family decided not to. But again, if you're going by what the parents are saying, or was there too much damage to the brain from the impact? I don't know. That's something I'd have to look into.
Well, they said the damage was to the back.
Yeah, it was the back of his head and it would be the frontal lobe.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I don't know. I didn't hear anything about a brain scan. There's quite a lot of mystery around this case. We still don't really know what happened or why this happened as such. But
yeah,
just depressed the shite out of you, haven't I?
Yeah.
I told you knew the case, though.
I knew. I didn't know.
You knew the gist of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... we'll move on. Oddity.
The Leaky Nipple.
Is it a pub?
It does sound a bit like a British pub, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The Leaky Nipple. Just heading down to the old Leaky Nipple.
Yeah.
You point to the lads.
So that's like it's not a pub?
No.
Okay.
No. A 44-year-old man arrives at the hospital after noticing that a, quote, foul-smelling pus had begun discharging from his right nipple.
See, that happens to my right nipple. Well, not a smelling one.
I honestly kept thinking about that. No, it's not the same situation, don't worry. But did you know that men can lactate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So our listeners understand. When I was about 10, 11, I was running down a path and I was running so fast, but I fell forwards and landed on my front, but like... scraped down the path and the gravel ripped half of my nipple off.
Half nip over there.
Yeah, it never grew back. And if I squeeze it enough, I can get some out.
Leave that with people for a second. Let them sit in that.
Yeah. I call myself Dribbly Nipple. Dribble Nipple.
Street name again, is it?
Yeah, Dribble Nipple.
Anyway, he tells the doctor that he wasn't in any particular pain. No difficulty breathing, no coughing, fever, nothing. And overall, he's in good health. So, puzzled by what could be causing this issue, they discuss his medical history a bit further. The man tells the doctor that he had previously been involved in a, quote, violent altercation, which resulted in him suffering from multiple cuts to his face, back, chest and abdomen. And as a result of limited resources, he had only been treated for the superficial injuries that he had received. They decided to x-ray the man in an attempt to solve the mystery of his leaky nipple. When they examined the x-rays, they found that the man had a metal object that had become lodged in his chest and that the object had entered through his scapula. Of course, they immediately bring the man in for surgery to remove the item. And they see that the tissue surrounding the item had become necrotic and the area was filled with this foul-smelling pus, which had now started to leak out. So, had he not come to the hospital when he did, his condition could have become a lot more serious. Following the surgery, this man was discharged from the hospital 10 days later, and his follow-up appointments went by without any serious cause for concern.
So I heard the word discharge there. Discharge from his nipple.
Yeah, but this time it was a good thing.
Yeah.
Now, the item that they'd removed was the blade of a knife. And the only reason this hadn't caused further potentially fatal damage was because his body was able to seal the object in a fibrous capsule, preventing further tissue damage. So basically, his body had formed a layer of protective tissue around the foreign object.
Yeah.
It was only when the pus had started leaking that he had any inclination to what was going on. But the most shocking part of this story is that the attack that resulted in this blade becoming lodged in his body happened 8 years previous.
Fucking hell.
How's that grab you? 8 years. He had a fucking knife just hanging about.
Well, he didn't have a knife.
Well, it was the blade.
Yeah.
That's the worst part of the knife, Neil, to have in your body.
It wouldn't have been a full fucking blade. It'll have snapped off.
I don't give a fuck. Any sharp bit of metal just hanging about, swimming about in your body, which is not great.
Yeah, 8 years, I can beat that. Right, so I'm 36 now. When I used to go to infants, after school, I used to have to go to this after school thing. So infants is from 4 until 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I was no older than 6 when this happened. Someone stabbed me with a pencil.
I was going to say, did you get a pencil stuck up you?
No. Let's say, grow up.
Did you just say you had a pencil in you?
No. Someone went to stab me with a pencil, mm-hmm. and I put my hand out.
Yeah.
And they stabbed the pencil into the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
And I still have lead in the palm of my hand. You can see it.
Yeah. So I'm just waiting for you to keel over any day now.
Well, yeah, I could get lead poisoning. How have I not got lead poisoning? Oh, my God.
I don't think it's a different thing in pencils now. I think for that reason.
Well, it's not biodegradable.
I think it's because of people in Sheffield stabbing each other. You know, their tendency to stab each other. Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
Honestly, I was about to say, I could see this happening to you.
So I have 30-year-old lead in my hand.
Mm.
How does that feel?
I don't know. It's your hand. How does it feel?
But yeah, you can't feel anything. You can just see it.
Mm. Well, like I said, I could honestly see this happening to you, Neil, and clearly it is something that could happen to you. So, lads, if you're watching the news and you hear about some Yorkshire man with something lodged in him, look no further.
Mm. With a dribbly nipple.
Let's legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.